This is Parshas Beshalach, Friday morning, Chumashir. And the question has been raised with regard to the Shira that Moshe Rabbeinu sang after the great miracle of the Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the Red Sea, and the destruction of the Egyptian army that had come chasing after them. The question is being phrased in a general way. What is the idea behind the Shira? Is it just a matter that they were... Let's ask that question. Should we understand the Shira that way? You could put yourself in their situation, having gone through an experience like that. Then imagine, put yourself in that situation where they had seen the Egyptians chasing after them, and the Jews panicked completely, and they weren't able to defend themselves. And then Moshe told them to just Hashem Yilachem Lachem, that God would fight for you. And then this tremendous miracle occurs. You can visualize it. And the waters are split, and they go into the dry land, and then the Egyptians chase after them, and then they observe their enemies absolutely destroyed. So obviously anybody would be filled with joy, and at least for that moment would be singing praises to Hashem. Is that really the idea, though? Is that all it is? It's just an emotional outpouring? I don't think that's the case. It's Az Yoshia Moshe. It says that Moshe Uvene Israel, which would indicate the Shira itself has been recorded in the Torah, which would indicate, well, the Shira itself is part of Torah. So all the ideas are part of Torah, which means that they were written. It doesn't mean, in my opinion, that Hashem dictated the Shira. It's not that Hashem told Moshe what to sing, but Moshe composed the Shira, obviously with Ruach HaKodesh, because the content, the substance, is Torah. Then Hashem instructed Moshe to write it down and make it a part of Torah. Once it becomes a part of Torah, so it has to be studied like any other part of Torah. So obviously, it's got profound ideas. So therefore, that eliminates the idea that it's just a outpouring of the emotions. And there's a number of questions that pertain to it. First of all, why is this miracle? Obviously, it's a great miracle, but the Jews experienced many miracles prior to the Kriyas Yamsuf. The miracles that they had witnessed in Egypt, the destruction culminating with the Makas Bechoros, and the fact that they were enabled to leave, and the Egyptians were completely destroyed. Not completely destroyed in that sense, but defeated. They could not prevent them. And they were to witness many more miracles. So what is so unique about this, a miracle, that it warrants a Shira, an extensive Shira? It's interesting to note that in Tanakh also, because the Haftorah for this week's Parsha is the Shira of Devorah. And it's similar, and obviously that's why it was chosen for the Maftir. It's similar in theme, because that Shira also was motivated by a tremendous military victory. Over the legions of Sisera, the destruction. Sisera was the great warrior who afflicted the Jews. And that also brought forth a Shira. But the question that I want to raise is that, what is the theme? I'm not going through every pasuk. What would you say are the major themes, though, of the Shira? Sometimes you have to look at something, at least for starters, in a more general way. You see general patterns. Then, of course, I mean, every word in the Torah has significance. Then you could break it down. But it's helpful to organize it, first and foremost. What are the themes of the Shira? Yeah, the main theme seems to be the domination of Hashem. Hashem Ish Milchama. And that's what I think, at least for starters, strikes as being strange. It's extolling God as a man of war. And superficially, that seems to be the preoccupation. The extolling of Hashem as a man of war obviously it's not meant literally, as a warrior. And God's ability, so to speak, to destroy. So it seems to be focused on that idea, the complete destruction of the enemy. And it goes into specifics about how the Amar Oyev Erdov Asik, that Tivle Emo, how the enemy plotted and thought that they would come out and they would destroy them. I'll chase after them and I'll get there. Shalal, I'll get the treasure. It's interesting you find the same theme in the Shira of Devorah, as she depicts the mother of Sisera, who's waiting for Sisera to come home, and he's getting later and later, and she's trying to rationalize. Oh, it's because he's had a big victory and he's collecting all the spoils. That same idea, that the enemy goes out there with this expectation. And it describes the manner in which they were cast into the sea like nothing. To the bottom of the sea, like a stone, and so on and so forth. So that seems to be the second major idea. And also about the nations. When the nations will hear. Shama Amim Yergazon. Namogu Kol Yoshvei Kanan. That all the inhabitants of Canaan. It also depicts how the nations of the world will hear about this, and they'll be absolutely stricken with fear. Now, the question that I want to ask is that, at least superficially, it seems a bit strange, because it seems one could make the case that it's extolling the glory of war and victory and destruction of one's enemies. And is that really the Jewish way, so to speak? Is that the Hashkafa? The value system of Judaism? That is to say, we're not opposed to the conduct of war. We don't believe in pacifism. It's a mitzvah. There's such a thing as milchama, as war. And there's milchemes mitzvah. There are situations in which you're obligated to fight against Amalek, as we read later on. Also, milchemes mitzvah, self-defense. So, clearly we believe in self-defense. And that's why you see that Moshe Rabbeinu slew the Egyptian, and David HaMelech slew Goliath, and he fought the wars of Hashem. But you never find that we extol. We don't have this military tradition. It's basically viewed as something which is a necessity. A necessary evil, if you want to use that term. But it's not something... Even I pointed out that Avraham Avinu was a military genius. The Torah doesn't describe it openly. In the situation where he went against the coalition of the four kings and he saved Lot and all the people of Sodom and so on and so forth, obviously with a commando group of 318 men. So obviously he planned for it. Chanikov. The Ralbag points this out, by the way. That he studied military tactics. Otherwise, how could he go off? He shouldn't read it superficially, that he just ran off and had blind faith that Hashem would save him, and he had no idea of how to conduct a war. That's absurd. But all this is hidden. So generally, this type of thing is hidden because other nations get hooked up on this. That's the biggest attraction to the human ego, to glorify yourself. But we never find that glorification of warfare and warriors. David HaMelech is because of the Tehillim. We don't remember him as a warrior. So yet, if you read the Shira, Hashem Ish Melchama, that we're praising God as a warrior. So that's the main question that I'd like to address. I want to approach this with another question. And that is, it's a question that's posed by the Ibn Ezra. Well, he asked the question in a different way. What happened to the Bnei Yisrael when they saw the Egyptian army coming after them? Because the Pasuk says that Hashem had given them instructions to go back towards Egypt. And this was part of Hashem's plan to ensnare the Egyptians. The Kabda Befaro, that God worked it out. He directed the Jews to move in a manner that would cause Paro to consider that they were lost, and to encourage him to chase after them. so that Hashem would perform this miracle and would destroy them. So at first the Jews listened to Moshe, and Rashi mentions that even though that what they were doing was dangerous, the Yeshuvu, God told them to go back. That's at the beginning. Davar ben Yisrael v'yoshuvu, they should go back v'yachanu l'fnei piachiros, and they should encamp in front of piachiros ben migdol l'fnei baal tzafon. And Paro will say that they're lost and so forth. Okay. Yeah, v'yasuchein. That's in the end of pasuk dalet. V'yasuchein, that the Jews listened to Moshe. And they went along with this. Okay. Vayasuchein, Rashi says, Lahagit Shifchan, that when the Pasuk says that they did this, it's praising them. Shashamu l'kol Moshe. They listened to the instruction of Moshe. V'lo Amar, and they didn't say, Heich niskarev el rodfenu. How can we draw closer to those who are chasing after us? Anu trichim livroach. To the contrary, we should run away. Elo amru, but they said, ein lanu ela divrei ben Amram. That we have to follow the words of Moshe. So they reached a very high level, and in spite of the fact that this was contrary to the emotion would be to get further away, still in all, they recognized that they have to listen to the voice of Moshe. Yeah, but you see, that attitude changed. Clearly, the pasuk is describing the fact that they, when they saw Mitzrayim chasing after them, that's the very next pasuk. Then it says that the Mitzrayim chased after them and caught up with them. The entire army of Paro, all the chariots, and Vishalishim al Kulo, he organized it. Clearly, Paro organized it in a manner to create the greatest impression upon them. And then it says, Paro Hikriv, and Paro drew close. And the Jews lifted up their eyes, and they saw Egypt, Mitzrayim, Nosei Achareim, was chasing after them. And they were greatly frightened. And they screamed out to God. And then they complained against Moshe. So what you see over here is a complete breaking of the ranks. Were there not enough graves in Egypt? That you took us out to die in the Midbar? Mazos asi solana. What have you done to us? L'hotzionu Mitzrayim. So now you see that, and this is something which is going to happen frequently, they experience, it's very hard for us to believe that, you know, looking back, you got to put yourself in their situation. But from our perspective, it's an amazing thing. Already they're complaining that they would have been better off to be in Mitzrayim. And that we told you, that in Mitzrayim, Chadalmi men, leave us alone, v'navdas Mitzrayim. And we'll serve Egypt. Ki tov lanu avodis Mitzrayim. Because it's better for us to serve Egypt, mimusein b'midbar, to die in the wilderness. So this seems to be a very, very significant collapse of the will, a regression of attitude, a general panic. It seems like the nation falls apart. And then Moshe said to the people, do not fear. Hisyatzvuru. Just you have to have at least the strength to stand up and ru and see. Don't fall apart completely. Because it's very significant what's going to be taking place. What's taking place is very, very significant, and it's a teaching experience. But it's interesting that even when Hashem is intervening for you and performing a miracle, that the person has to be capable of observing it. Yeah, sometimes a person is in such a state of panic that even if he's being saved, he can't participate. He can't follow it. He can't get the meaning of it. And see the Yeshua Hashem, the salvation of God that He'll do for you this day, in that as you see Mitzrayim Hayom, as you see them Lo Sosifun Larosam O Dadolam, you'll never see them again. But here's the key. Hashem Yilachem Lachem. God will fight for you, the Atem Tacharishin. And you remain silent. There's two questions over here. The Evan Ezra asks one question. And that is, why didn't the Jews fight back? Simple question. He says a nation of approximately 600,000 men of fighting age, able-bodied people. That's a large number. We don't know the number of the army that Paro sent out, but the 600,000, that's a significant amount of people. And the Pasuk makes clear, v'chamushim alu. He doesn't mention it. I'm just paraphrasing it in my terms. But if you say that they did not have the weaponry at all, it's not the case. The Pasuk points out clearly, v'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim, that they went out armed. So why weren't they able to make an effort to fight back? What's the purpose of this collapse? What's the point, rather, the reason? I want to add to that another question, though. And that, whatever the case, let's just assume that was... He provides a very, very significant explanation. But whatever the case, let's just say at that point in time they were incapable. They hadn't reached that point where they were able to fight back. I think that's somewhat understandable. However, it seems very strange, because at the end of the parsha, we read about the encounter with Amalek. That's the very end of the parsha. Vayavo Amalek. Amalek came, Vayilachem Yisrael Refidim, and they made a war with Yisrael in Refidim. Now, this happens only a few weeks later. It's not a very significant amount of time. And then Moshe said to Yoshua, B'char lanu anashim, choose men, v'tzehi lachim b'Amalek, and go out and fight against Amalek. Then he says that tomorrow he's going to stand at the top of the hill, and his hands will be stretched forth to heaven. I'm not going to get into that whole aspect right now, the Yod of Shel Moshe factor, because that's an interesting point in its own right, that the battle seemed to be connected somehow, that when Moshe's hands were up, the Jews were in the ascendancy, and when his hands were down, then Amalek. So then they devised the plan. They supported him so his hands would be up all the time. That's something that should be analyzed on its own. What does one thing have to do with the other? And why? Apparently Moshe didn't realize this, that when his hands would come down, they would start to get weaker. And then he had to come up with this solution, so to speak. What was his Hava Amina? All right, these are interesting questions, which we'll put off for the time being. But the question is, it would seem, these are the very same people who collapsed completely by the Yam Suf when they saw the Egyptians chasing after them. So how do we understand that? If that's the case, then they simply weren't capable of war. You mean to tell me such a few weeks later? And now they're capable of... Here they were capable of fighting back. True it is that they gained some kind of strength from observing Moshe, whatever that means, but still they were able to fight. So what happened in between? That the Evanezer doesn't ask that question, but I think it's a valid question. What was the cause for this, I would say, transformation? So the Evanezer explains that the reason why they weren't able to fight back against the Egyptians is because it's a psychological phenomenon. That these were their former masters. You have this phenomenon of it's a psychological thing, it's a slave mentality. And there's the tendency, I'm using my own words, I'm embellishing. You could take a look at the Evanezer, he always speaks very briefly. And that is that there was this phenomenon of the overestimation of the strength. That's how, once you become a slave, you have this tendency to project all kinds of power onto the master. This deification, the overestimation. And you feel it's simply impossible for you to fight against him. It's not necessarily the case only when you're the slave and the master. I think it's a universal kind of a phenomenon. It's interesting that there's a Rashi, right? Chait explained, interesting pasuk, interesting Rashi, where it says that the Jews lifted their eyes. Uparo Hikriv, that's in Yud Dalet, pasuk Yud. So it says, "V'hine Mitzrayim noseach areihem," that they lifted their eyes, and behold, Egypt was chasing after them. So Rashi brings down a midrash. Noseach areihem, it says belev echad, kiish echad. That's one shot, because it's in the singular that they were traveling after them, like belev with one attitude, completely united. Davar achar, another pshat Rashi says, v'hinei Mitzrayim noseach areihem, ro'u sar shel Mitzrayim. They saw the sar, the master of Egypt, noseach min hashamayim, traveling forth from heaven, lazor l'Mitzrayim, to help Egypt. So, what does that mean? It's a very strange kind of thing. Is that to be taken literally? You mean they looked up to heaven? Is there such a thing? And there was some kind of an angel flying from heaven to help the Egyptians? Can't take that literally. So how are we to understand that? So Rabbi Chaik gave pshat, and it's a universal thing. There's a certain aura. Every army, every oppressor seeks to exploit. There's a certain vulnerability that people have, and that is to project all kinds of powers onto certain people. And every dictator seeks to intimidate others by exploiting that, to give the sense that he's simply unbeatable. That's the deification of man. And whenever you see, it operates, by the way, not just in this, in every area, even on things like sports and so on and so forth. Everyone's looking for the superhero. And when you find someone who has tremendous talents or whatever, it's not realistic. You don't just say, okay, he's got these talents and so forth, but he's unbelievable, he's magic, he's an idol, this idolization. Even though people may not believe it literally, but the truth of the matter is it has a very significant effect. And it works, because once people project that quality onto you, it's hopeless. There's no way we can beat you. It's a mental phenomenon. That's what Goliath tried to do to the Bnei Israel, to intimidate them, that it's hopeless. There's no way, unbeatable. And that's what caused the panic. That's what induced the panic. That until that point in time, they had the courage. They listened to the word of Moshe. But when they actually saw the Egyptians in that type of a formation, and the army gave off that aura, that's what it means, that they were affected by that. And in their mind, it goes together with what the Evan Ezra is saying. There's many factors over here. In addition to the fact that they were the masters, and they were the all-powerful masters. So that once you have that, you're defeated. And that's what Hitler, Yimach Shemo, that's what he tried to do. That's why it was possible for even small amounts of Germans to guard, oppress large amounts of people. Once people have the idea that you're unbeatable, you're indestructible, so then there's nothing you could do. You're absolutely defeated. That was the state that the Jews were in at that point in time, and it's because of that that they were not commanded to fight. They couldn't fight psychologically. They were still enslaved. Now, in my opinion, then, the real significance of the Kavda Bavaro, the whole idea of the splitting of the Red Sea and the destruction of the Egyptian army, especially in that manner, was not for the sake of this. To the contrary, of course, God gave the Egyptians every opportunity to do tshuva. That's not the desire at all. In fact, the Malachi Asharis, according to Chazal, they also wanted to sing Shira, and they were rebuked because there's an element of tragedy. Masa Yodai Tovim Biyam. That the works of God's hands. It's not that God doesn't like the Egyptians, to the contrary. That they too were created for the purpose of recognizing Hashem, but they became corrupted. So the point of that was his Yatzvu Ura'u, to learn something from this. And that is that whole attitude, and this is a major theme of Judaism, especially in the Tfilos, that don't put your faith in man. That no matter how much you find someone and you're convinced this person is unbelievable, it's all false. He's just a human being. And at the end of the day, he's weak. And the only one that's deserving of that type of a emunah and faith is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the only true source of strength. That's the only area in which man should have that factor of deification. That's the essence of the what they witnessed. When they saw this army, which they themselves had elevated to such a high level as being unbeatable, and when they saw them absolutely destroyed, and Chazal talked about it, that's why it depicts that they couldn't believe it. These chariots, these soldiers, the waters were picking them up and throwing them down like it was absolutely nothing. They were screaming. They heard their screams, Chazal say. That's a very important thing, that they heard their screams. Because you can't associate these mighty warriors as being like babies and screaming like women. It's interesting. I read an account of the uprising in the Warsaw Ghetto, when the remaining Jews in the Warsaw Ghetto, when they realized what awaited them and so forth, they organized. They decided to, they were going to clean out the ghetto. They decided to have a revolt, and basically they were just teenagers and whoever was left, and it turned out that they resisted the German army, had a tough time. They couldn't beat them. They resisted longer than the whole nation of Poland was able to resist against Germany. And some of the accounts, when they first started, the Germans came in, they thought they'd wipe them out in 2 seconds. But they were fighting with primitive weapons, with Molotov cocktails and so forth. And a tank came through one of the streets, and one of the fighters ran up to him, pulled open the hatch, and threw in a Molotov cocktail, and it blew up. And they saw the Germans jumping out of there, and the same way screaming and yelling, the Jews are fighting back, and they were like little babies. That's when there was a turning point. Then they lost that fear, and they saw that that's all in their own minds. They're just human beings, and of course you have to deal with them, but you can fight them back. And if you have an appropriate strategy, you'll discover their weakness. And that's what takes place over here. That the pasuk describes it. Let's go. You'll see what triggers the shira. If you take a look at the psukim, towards the very end of the description of the Kriyas Yamsuf, take a look at chapter Yudalad, the end of chapter Yudalad. Uvenei Yisrael hochu ba'yabash pesachayam. And the Jews went on dry land in the middle of the sea. Va'mayim lehem choma mimino u'smolam. And the waters formed a wall on the right and on the left. Take a look at the next two psukim. Vayoshar Hashem, vayom hu es Yisrael, miyad Mitzrayim. And God saved Yisrael on that day from Mitzrayim. Now look at the words. Vayar Yisrael es Mitzrayim meis al sfas hayam. And they saw, this seems to be obvious. Well, of course they saw them dead. They saw them dead on the banks of the Yam. Vayar Yisrael asayyad ha'gdola, and they saw the great hand, Asher asar Hashem b'Mitzrayim, that God had visited upon Egypt, inflicted on. Vayiru amasar Hashem, and the nation feared God. Vayaminu bar Hashem with Moshe Avdo, and they believed. They believed. What does that mean? They believed. They reached a completely new level of emunah, because to the extent that man is caught up in the notion of people, that's the whole idea of the war against Amalek. Amalek is the nation that denies the existence, denies God, and maintains the supremacy of man. As long as people have that emotion, it prevents them from recognizing God. So it's telling you, Az Yashir Moshe, that's when the song comes in. The entire idea of the Shira is not to extol war. The entire idea is not to glorify in the fact that the Egyptians were destroyed. To the contrary, the whole point is to show that that notion of human might is absolutely absurd. And that the only true strength, the only source of strength, Azi v'zimrasya ka, that my strength, that as long as a person acts in accordance with the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's the only true source of strength. And everything else is sheker. So basically, in a sense, they were liberated. Piachiros. Chiros refers to freedom. That the Jews before this were not capable of fighting against Mitzrayim because they still partook of that element of deification of man. Especially so, as the Evan Ezra says, how much more so against those who were your masters. So they still viewed them as masters. And once they saw these people whom they viewed as masters, in that light, in that situation, Hashem took over. In the hands of God, they're absolutely nothing. And the manner in which it unfolded was absolutely convincing to them that there's no such thing as human might. And that's why when the nations hear about this, they'll be filled with fear. It's not because that's what we desire, but rather it means that the entire world will recognize the truth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what I wanted to say, that it was with that idea that the only true source of strength is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why they were able to fight the war against Amalek, because they experienced this. They feared God, which means they lost their fear of man. Because it wasn't a physical phenomenon. It wasn't that physically speaking they couldn't fight. It was a psychological phenomenon. And once they had gone through this experience, of course then it was very, very important to take the experience and to put it into words. And Moshe formulated the words. All the words, all the ideas, all the concepts that have to do with this. That's why it wasn't just a situation where people have a great experience and they just start jumping and dancing. It wasn't an emotional outpouring. It was the nevuah. That is, it was the Ruach HaKodesh of Moshe Rabbeinu. And once they went through that, they were a changed people. And it doesn't mean, of course, that's something else. Obviously, they complained about the water. That's a major story of the travails in the wilderness, so to speak. That's a different phenomenon. But because they weren't perfected, that's something else. You still have to struggle. And you still have to work through all of your emotions and so on and so forth. But in terms of the ability to fight, that they would no longer look at any nation in that way. That's why they were able to fight against Amalek. You see also, I mean, I'm not going into it now, I don't have enough time, but the Yod of Shel Moshe, they still needed that extraneous reminder that apparently that image of Moshe being the spalal to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when they saw that, it reinforced them in that idea. Perhaps the idea had not been completely internalized, but you see the connection. As long as they were connected to that idea, so then they fought with tremendous strength, and they had the divine assistance, and they were victorious. So that, I think, in general, that's the basic idea of the Shira. I can't explain the extent to which they were freed from this, and does this ever crop up again? And that's a good question. It's hard to answer those questions. Sufficient, yes, it was sufficient, though, because we see that now they were able to fight. B'char lanu anashim, that's also interesting. Choose men. So apparently, then perhaps it means able-bodied, not just able-bodied men, but tzaddikim, people that have the capability, people that have learned the lesson. But even there we see that without the hands of Moshe, they couldn't have fought completely by themselves, so that's something else. The extent to which that is internalized, that's true of anything when you experience something and it has the capability of elevating you. Well, then the question is, how much? How perfected are you in that regard? You have to work on that. To what extent has it permeated your soul? That I can't really answer, other than to say it was sufficient so that that's the idea of the Shira, though. That's the idea of the Shira. That's the concept of the Shira. That's the full significance of the experience. That's what Hashem said, V'kavda b'faro, that the name of God will be magnified. That when God executes justice against the Rishayim, his name is magnified in the world. That's a Rashi over there too. That's the whole idea we're talking about. The triumph of the Rasha is a Chil Hashem, because it prevents people from recognizing God. But the destruction of the Rishayim is a Kiddush Hashem. As far as the concept of a Shira is concerned, it has to do with, it's not just an abstract phenomenon over here, but a Shira is formulating some ideas You see, also, I think this is what's highlighted by the Shira of Miriam. Because after the Bnei Yisrael sang the Shira, it says that the Miriam, Hanaviyah, see, she acted with Nevuah. It says she took the drums, and all the women went forth after with drums and with dances. But she didn't add anything substantively to the Shira. She said the same basic refrain, Ashir Lashem ki go go, Sosferofo Ramavayam. That, but just briefly, it seems to me that what it highlights is the idea of a Shira is where it's not just expressing abstract ideas, but it's got to be something which involves all the emotions as well. That it's a redirecting of the emotions, the Ahavas Hashem. So that's what a Shira is. The reason why a Shira, that is, the reason why people are attracted to songs is because it reinforces it. When something, you can express an idea in the abstract, but when an idea is appealing and then it's put to in a certain form and with a certain tune, it has an impact upon the emotions as well. So obviously that's the significance of this. And that part of it was reinforced. The women, Miriam, the drums, the dancing, and so forth, is to go further than that. And that is to really make sure that these ideas are internalized emotionally as well. The emotional perfection of man. It's not enough. That's a very... This too is a basic fundamental. That our concept of learning and knowledge is that it's not just that a person has the ideas, but... they become a part of his whole emotional makeup, that all of his emotions are in line with the ideas. So that's what the Shira represents. That's the idea of Shevach. Shevach is something which can't just be abstract. I'm stating something. Shevach has to be something which is fully expressed by my emotions. If you're not feeling the emotion, then it's not Shevach. It's not praise.